Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
I'm Brittany Pacheco.
And I'm Frank Cooper.
And we are the Watchers in the Basement.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. Today, today we're here to talk about episode 4 of the Amazon Prime series, Gen V, which is from the world of the Boys. It's a Boys spinoff. And if you're with us last week, we talked about the first 3 episodes. Today we're only talking about one episode, thankfully. And before we get into the latest episode, Frank, you're joining us this week. What do you think about the series so far?
I love it. From the minute it came on, it's I feel like I'm watching the Boys, just new characters. I love how they infuse where we at in this storyline, as far as what's transpired with the Boys, the main series, to what's going on now, how they're connecting it. I love that. I love how it's cool to see it from a perspective. It's cool to see it from a perspective of how much of an effect what's going on with the Seven is permeating throughout the storyline in Gen V. And even with all that's going on with the Seven and Homelander and Starlight leaving, how there is still just this prestige opportunity for people who still want to be part of the Seven. Right. I thought after what we saw in the season finale of season 3 of the Boys that the prestige and the notoriety of the Seven would have been tarnished, but nah, it's still the it team, I guess, when it comes to superheroism, I guess.
Yeah, I think Vought has done a good job of keeping that under wraps. I think that's what we're kind of led to believe, is that not a ton of people know what happened in the Boys as far as even the major things. It's just, Homelander killed a guy, but obviously they can spin it around where it's like, oh, he's on the other side, and this whole political kind of battle. So I don't think anyone in the world besides the Boys themselves truly know how evil Vought and the Supes are. So, but no, I agree with you. This show is so good. It's just like the Boys continued. It's like season 3.5 of the Boys. So I'm loving it. Also, let's talk about this episode. The Whole Truth, episode 4. Brittany, why don't you give me your thoughts on the episode, and if you want to, break down why it's called The Whole Truth.
I mean, it pretty much speaks for itself. I mean, for the first 3 episodes, we're given the foundation of what Godalkin University is, the characters that we're following, of course, and a secret scientific experiment, one I guess would assume very similar to that of Sage Grove, from the Boys. So we just have a university version of Sage Grove happening underneath the university, and it involves one of the university's most prestigious students, Golden Boy. His brother is being, if you will, tortured with this the woods experiment, right? And it seems like a lot of people are involved in it. A lot of the faculty that we've met thus far, one of the trustees who happens to be a parent of the now ranking number one. And it's very sketchy, of course. Sam is incredibly, incredibly strong. And it's even suggested in this episode that he's stronger than his brother Golden Boy, whom, we saw his demise in the first episode. And so we're learning more about Sam. We're learning more about what's really happening in the multitude of things, because the whole truth is kind of I think it's part of that show that what's his name? Tech Knight, who kind of is this Geraldo type character in the world of the Boys, where he's a superhero, but he now hosts this show where he's solving mysteries that have gone on in this world. And so now with Godalkin losing its number one ranking superhero, he's there to investigate and to discover the whole truth.
Right. Yeah. Tech Knight is a former soup who's now turned into a true crime TV host. And he has a show on Vought Plus, which is named The Whole Truth. And he's kind of an amalgamation of like Tony Stark, Iron Man, Bruce Wayne, Batman. He's supposed to be this, the world's greatest detective from what I can gather. But he also has like a Sherlock Holmes kind of detective ability, like almost like it's that superpower where he can like notice every little thing. He has these like observational powers, and he's very good at interrogating guests. And we see that on full display in this episode. Frank, what do you think about this character? I mean, obviously, I don't think we're going to see a ton more of Tech Knight after what happens in the episode, but what did you think about this character, his addition to this, the boys' world?
My first thought was, I need more Tech Knight. That's what I need. Like, he is the comic relief of this. He should be the comic relief of this series, but I don't think we'll see him again. If we do, it'll be in a small dosage. But dude's hilarious, man. His kink, like what he's into. I had to watch his scenes twice because I couldn't believe what I was watching. And I should be at a point of watching The Boys where nothing surprises me. But the blackmail part, man, when I forgot the lady's name, but when the dean Shetty. Yeah, when Dean Shetty put out the blackmail and the surveillance cameras of him doing the deed on multiple objects and things, and it's just like, wow. He's a delight to see, man. Like, he's funny as hell. He's delightful as far as like, he's so like, he's like what the show needed, that comic relief. Well, cause it's a very dark episode. Like, I mean, I think before the episode comes on, it talks about like, hey, if you're experiencing suicide or anything like that, like, you know, call this hotline number. So the dark remnants of the show, and then you infuse him. I mean, it was a perfect balance of like darkness and like comedy in this episode.
I'm glad you clarified yourself, because I was getting a little worried by you saying I had to watch his scenes twice, and then you're saying he was a delight to watch. I'm like, bro, I need you to think about what you're saying before you say it.
His character is very it's very jarring and like very unique. And like I thought he'll be more of a mainstay. But like once you get to the end of the episode, you see that, you know, the brilliance of Dean Shetty of ridding him of this character. Cause like you can tell how powerful he is, but like there's a scene where Dean Shetty and Tech Knight are talking, and like she's trying to hide this thing, and Tech Knight just automatically just finds out from the sweat of her brow and like her heart rate raising up and all of that. It kind of gives you a glimpse of like how powerful Tech Knight is. And she's afraid. Like once he leaves the room in that scene, she's like she exhales, like she's sweating like bullets at this point. So I kind of wish that the character would have stayed along a little bit longer, but maybe we'll see him again soon.
Yeah, I don't think he's someone that you introduce a character like that and then just never bring him back. Like, we have to see him again, because I'm pretty sure, and I'm just guessing, that other events are going to unfold, namely about the woods, and he's going to be back to, just expose everything. Dean Shetty, the university in itself, like everyone who was involved. I'm pretty sure this is not going to be the last time we see Tech Knight. And you're right, Frank, like he comes off as someone like you don't want to fuck around with, because he can just read you. He can read, like your internal system, right? Your heart rate, the fact that he said to Dean Shetty, by the way, you're ovulating. I'm like, oh, okay, we're doing that. But like, he can see just like the tremor of your pores and all these other heightened senses, what have you. It's really fascinating to watch him, like what Justin was saying earlier, kind of like the Sherlock-esque sort of detective mode, and he can just read you, that you can't lie to him, you can't hide anything from him, and how he breaks Marie during their branding class. It was really impressive. But then like when he breaks, he's funny. Like he couldn't take himself seriously when he's walking and doing his kind of intro about Godalkin, and just it's like he couldn't take what was written, whether he wrote it or not. He couldn't take it seriously. He's like, all right, let's reset. And, he's doing the mouth techniques or the word techniques to not fumble your words. And so, yeah, he played his part well. And I would be really disappointed if we didn't get to see him again, because aside from the kink in and of itself. My God. I mean, because you notice, like, when he picked up the bagel, he's like, ooh. And listen, I like bagels. Don't get me wrong. I like bagels.
Not like he does, though.
Not like he does. And when he picked up, like, the little tape dispenser thing, and he's just kind of, you know, just casually, gracefully, you know, just kind of, you know, circling around. I was like, what is this? Is this like a tick? Is this like, what is happening here? And then, of course, Dean Shetty in all of her, you know, badassness, she exposes him for what he is. And now the tables have turned. He's worried because it's going to show up on Instagram if he exposes Godolkin and like everything that's happening.
I guess my question is, because like he has like this sixth sense, like he can sense anything. He's kind of like a Wolverine, like Justin said, Wolverine, Tony Stark, Batman, greatest detective mindset. Like, were all of these footages caught on campus? Where is he at for Dean Shetty to be able to like get all of this dirt on him?
I think it was on campus. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Because that would be the only way to make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, because as you saw, like, you know, he noticed the tree after he finishes like the last. He sees the hole in the tree. He likes holes. The dude's into holes. He's got like the shop vac thing, and he's going to town on that. And like,
the hand, the warm, the hand dryer in the bathroom. Dryer. My God.
Got to put a bucket up there so he's tall enough to get up in the.
That has to be uncomfortable, man. Because that's just cold metal. Like that has to be uncomfortable. Like, how do you get to that position to position yourself to even do that?
But I think the air was also blowing at the same time.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, that was disturbing.
Dude, oh. he was fucking the shit at that car, bro. Like, I don't know, was the window or like a crevice between the door.
I think it's the gas tank.
Don't say the gas tank. Oh my!
No, I think it's meant to be the gas tank. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Bro, he was like, he was Spider-Man. He was plastered to the side of that car, bro. Like, it was like, I was watching it with a buddy of mine. We just broke it. I was in tears. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I'm like, is he fucking the wind? Like, we actually studied that scene because I couldn't tell what he was like getting it in at. Like, is it the window? Is it the crevice?
To the wall, to the sweat drop. Sorry.
That car is pregnant.
There you go.
Oh, with a gasoline baby. Oh, my
there
God.
You go. I mean, gas is high now. You got to put in whatever you got, I guess. Yeah, what other sources of fuel, I guess. You know, he's trying to save the planet.
I mean, he's so compelling. I would be happy with a Tech Knight, like, spinoff or prequel of, like, him in college. Just because, like, his, like, all jokes aside, like, with his powers, I want to know what went wrong. Like, you would think he would be, like, a top two cadet in the university. I want to know what wrong.
Yeah.
I think we're just kind of made to believe that he went the celebrity route. Like, not all of them can make the seven. Obviously there's only seven of them. And it sounds like the seven stays intact for as long as possible. So there's not a ton of spots that are available. And
but
obviously
for him to go into more like investigative, like instead of doing actual crime fighting, because we know that's a school in Godolkin, the Lamplighter School of Criminal, whatever it's called. But like he took the route of, I'm going to do investigative journalism and that kind of thing. That's just my guess, you know, because those are some pretty awesome powers to be able to read people and know if someone's lying or not. I don't know. It's impressive.
And then also like with the seven, like, how is the recruiting ratio broken down? Because when we seen the boys, Starlight, she like did like a nationwide, it was like a nationwide recruitment search that she applied to. I don't think she went to Godolkin, but also in the show, you see that I think two of the spots or three of the spots of like the seven was all like through the Godolkin University. So like, what's the ratio of like where they get the recruits from?
No, that's a good question.
T-Money.
What up?
Tristan's
welcome
here.
Tristan.
We were talking about Tech Knight. What are your thoughts on that character?
Man, like I was wondering like his backstory, especially on his powers. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming we're gonna learn more about him because He kind of left some traces, some things. Like, I know he was like circling and swinging around things. Like, I'm assuming it's to spy or to like collect DNA. I don't know, but I don't think he just gave up that easily. It was like, oh, we're never going to see him again. Like, he seems like a big, big character. So I'm interested to learn more about him.
I don't think he was there to collect DNA. I think he was there to leave DNA. My goodness. Especially with that tree. My God.
Man.
Yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement that this will not be the last time we see Tech Knight of, by any stretch of the imagination, whether it be Gen V or maybe in The Boys. I'm pretty sure we're going to have like some like crossover at some point. Not just with Gen V, but like into Gen V going into The Boys, you know, because these are timelines that are happening simultaneously. So I think Tech Knight is, this isn't the last of him for sure.
And I feel like he was mentioned in one of the previous seasons of The Boys. Like, it was like an offhand reference from somebody, but I knew that name before this episode. And I was like, yeah. I know there's a reason why I know the name, and I didn't read the comics. Likely. So
it's very likely. I think too, just because the fact that, you know, Dean Shetty exposed him for who he is because of his, sadly, because he has a brain tumor, it has somehow unleashed this unusual proclivity of Tech-Knight. And I just like, I, you know, the mind in it of itself is a really interesting, powerful, creation, but like for something to cause you to become that obsessive with holes is really fascinating.
I didn't know brain tumors can do that. That's a new thing on me.
I don't know. I want to know who her intel, you know, was as well. Because that, I mean, it's not like medical records are easily accessible, but maybe they are in the world of The Boys.
Yeah, in the world of Vought, I think it's probably.
Or maybe it's one of those things where they have records in the Shady Grove. Is that what it's called?
Sage Grove.
Maybe it's one of those things where they have, you know, records at Shady Grove of all their heroes, of all their.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he went through there because he went to John Hopkins Hospital, which is like a really, you know, well-known hospital in the country. But nonetheless, yeah, it's how quickly she dug to get information on him to blackmail and say, you know, you're going to leave the university alone. You're going to leave the top five alone. And if you don't, this is going to show up on Instagram. And he's like, well, there's nothing here. On to the next one.
So, right.
It's like how quickly we write off the mystery that was Godolkin and what happened to Golden Boy. And it's like, yeah, he just, you know, cracked. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, nothing, I mean, nothing more.
The whole point of his show is to cover up for Vought. He spins his tail, and, you know, as he said, he was going to pin it on her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as he said, like, the top five, they might make some money for the company, but you're just a human. You're a nobody. So we can replace you. You're a suit. We can replace you. So I don't know. I think he's a great character. I think we might see him in The Boys. I don't think we're going to see him in this series this season again. So, but I did want to say the final thing about him is, I think he was a very funny character. One of my favorite lines he had was when he was shooting that show and he's interviewing Andre and his dad, and, you know, it all blows up because Andre gets mad and walks away, and he turns to his crew and he's like, we'll find it in the edit. it's like something a crazy director would say on a wild
shoot.
I know he does. It's a real line that certain people will say, but it's it's just so funny. And also, you're right, all the counting down he does and all the, you know, buoyant baby bumper, whatever the stuff he's saying to like get his you know,
tongue twisters
get those out of the way. I don't know, that is a great character.
Yeah,
so great. Yeah, so from that, I mean, there's so much in this episode to get to. Let's just get to it right now. This is what we want to talk about for sure. There's an exploding dick in this episode. Like, I did not see that coming at all. Like, I mean, even what we've seen in The Boys,
I mean, he didn't come either. It's just,
no,
you know.
He did not. Also let's talk about Marie's power, because Marie Moreau exploded Rufus the psychic's dick, right? I want to know, because I mean, the way I understood her powers is she cuts her hand open and she can control her blood and do all kinds of crazy things with it. Okay, so he wasn't bleeding. Now the blood was moving, obviously, in a certain part of him. So can she control blood inside? Because if she can do that, well, then she can explode people's brains, right? I mean, what do y'all think, Tristan? Let me know.
That's what it seems like to me. Like she is discovering on accident, like the limits of these powers, or like how far they go. And yeah, they kind of showed the close up of the blood moving inside of his, you know, penis, and she was able to control that and bring it out. And it
exploded. Penis.
This is a medical. This is a medical podcast. Yeah.
What are we five?
We're very technical. No, I mean, it's the correct term.
PP.
I mean,
come on. I've known him 20 years. He's never said penis before. I'm just surprised. It's just,
I'm sure I've used the word some type of legalese or something, but
his wee wee.
Yeah, pee pee. So yeah, like she doesn't even know. That's the interesting part of it. Like these powers are relatively new, and she's probably spent a good portion of it like rejecting and like hating the fact that she's had those powers. So she's in discovery of a lot of things about herself, let's just say.
There you go.
So those powers, that's the biggest part of it.
So what I was going to say is, to me, it seemed very clear in episode 2 that she was able to not only control her blood and weaponize it, but the blood doesn't necessarily have to be weaponized. Because she was able to save that woman in the club after Andre, you know, sliced her with his little metal bird thing. And she was able to cause the blood to go back into the woman's body and therefore saving her. So as long as there's blood flowing, whether it be internally or externally, I think she's just able to control it. So it doesn't have to be her blood. It could be just other people's blood. So it made sense that in a fearful moment, where she probably was going to be violated.
Yeah.
She just so happened to weaponize Rufus's own blood and his pee-pee. I just wanted to say that. In his penis and you know, cause it to explode. Yeah, I was not expecting to see that. First of all, I know this is college. People like to get naked. People like to have sex. I get it. People like to do other things that are very wrong. What Rufus was about to do to Marie. So I applaud her for maybe unintentionally blowing up his dick. It's fine.
It's okay. I mean, this changes the game. Like, you can manipulate blood flow internally. Like, you can destroy anybody at this point. Like, you're powerful as fuck. Like, and like, I think that scene shows you that she, like Tristan said, she's still learning her powers. She's still evolving. And if she can do that, what else can she do? Because she hasn't really been, from what we've seen, she hasn't really been in superhero situations of saving people to like see her powers, you know, coming into the fold outside of the lady in the club that night in episode 1. So, you know, I'm sure there's more to it than just blood. Maybe it's matter as well. Maybe she can manipulate matter. For all we know, we don't know yet. I mean, we're still learning her as a character, and she's still learning her powers as well. So
I think for the longest, because she's viewed her powers as being a bad, monstrous ability, that's why she probably hasn't experimented to see if she can do some good with it. You know, saving people with, you know, they're bleeding out, or, you know, exploding people's dicks if they're trying to violate a young woman. You know what I'm saying? Like, she clearly has not taken the time to experiment, because she's probably viewed her powers as something monstrous. Makes sense.
I mean, as Tech Knight said, her powers are nasty. They're nasty powers.
So. I mean, Brink said the same thing too when he was, you know, rejecting her from the school. So, yeah.
There's no four quadrant appeal, he said. I should point out that the reason why she went to see Rufus, so, I mean, she didn't go to his dorm room per se, but she met up with him on a campus because he has psychic abilities. I did think it was funny whenever she walked up, he was watching an episode of The Whole Truth, and he's watching an episode featuring She-Hemoth, which is a blue knockoff of She-Hulk. Did y'all notice that?
Mm-hmm.
That was, yo, I thought she was kind of like a Thrawn type character because she was blue, she had red eyes. I'm like,
that's tomorrow's pod. Yeah, we're doing Ahsoka tomorrow. No, definitely a ripoff or a parody of She-Hulk. I thought that was kind of cool.
For sure.
But she goes to Rufus because she's looking for Emma. She's also looking for her, you know, long lost sister. And then he, you know, obviously takes advantage of her. But when he does that, something major happens in this episode where time is skipped or she loses track of time. And we see that happen again later on in the episode. I'll go to you, Frank, first. What did you think about that kind of way of storytelling? Because we haven't really seen that in The Boys. And I've heard other people say, like, they thought like their TV messed up or their Amazon skipped or something. Cause it was kind of jarring how something like they're literally in the middle of a conversation. Then bam, you know, she's waking up in Rufus's dorm room and he's like standing over her naked in a robe.
Yeah. I think she might have, when I saw that, I was thinking, does she have like telekinetic powers to where she can like, not just black out, but like move forward time or like freeze time, or because like you see it towards the end of the episode as well, involving everybody. So
yeah,
it looks like she has some form of telekinesis. And when I saw that, I thought Jean Grey. that's the first thing I thought, was like she has some type of some form of telepathy.
There you go.
Telepathy. Thank you. Some form of that. And it's but I wonder how, because like Jean Grey can move things with her mind and she can like manipulate things with her thoughts like she can with her blood or any type of blood. So I'm thinking some type of telekinesis or telepathy.
Mm-hmm. Brittany, what do you think about that?
I don't think it's her. I really don't. I really do feel it's Rufus, because he says, you know, he's psychic. He does have telepathy, astral projection, as well as being clairvoyant. So I think with a lot of those abilities, he's able to manipulate and cause some sort of memory loss in a way. And it's just because I want to see how they do it, because we've seen it in Doctor Strange with the astral projection. Maybe he was able to do something like that to her, to where it's like an out of body experience, and that's why she has no recollection of that time when she was sitting with him at the bench to the moment we see her again in the dorm room. I don't know, but I definitely think Rufus has a lot to do with it. It's just curious when it happened again towards the end of the episode, because the group are at a house trying to, and we're just gonna, you know, jump around here. They're trying to get Sam, who's escaped the woods, and calm him down and, you know, try to help him, but it glitches, quote unquote, blacks out. And the next thing you know, we see Marie in a dorm room, not by herself.
Right.
And it's kind of like, oh, this happened again. But see, it only makes sense really when you watch the trailer for episode 5, which kind of gives you a little bit more possible information as to what's happening. But I think Rufus has a lot to do with it.
It seems like all the characters are experiencing some lost time. Tristan, what do you think is behind that issue with these characters?
I'm trying to think of like a common experience that they all went through. Mm-hmm. Where I don't know, something happened, or maybe, you know, there was something up with the place that they were in that caused all of them to kind of go through the same thing. But I'm drawing a blank on that. Like, can anybody else think about a place where all of those, everybody who's experienced some type of blackout, like where have they all been at the same time? I'm thinking like maybe the club, but I'm drawing a blank besides that.
I don't know, because Sam wasn't with them. No. You know what I'm saying? Like outside of like the students, Sam was never really with them. Sam's only been with Emma one-on-one. And then he's also been in the same vicinity as Andre and Marie when they were able to take him down. And then he was sent back to the woods. So he's never really been with any of these characters all at once. you know, he's been around Claire that one time she and Luke went to go see him at Sage Grove. I don't know when he would have ever been around the whole lot of them, but I'm thinking, not saying that Rufus has an in on the woods, but maybe there's more to him than what we've seen. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he's a mole, probably.
He could be. It's very possible. Unless there are others like him that just showed up right place, right time. I don't know.
I think the Dean might be involved, because if you think about both times Marie, it's happened to her in the episode, she wakes up in her dorm room or a dorm room. So, and if you notice, like, the dorm rooms are like prison cells, like they can't open the windows. So I don't know if they're like, there's being like gas or something pumped in, or some kind of like controlling agent that, you know, I don't know if they're controlling them somehow through the room. I don't know. Honestly, I can't really explain it, but I think obviously Rufus, we're meant to think he's involved because of his powers, but I think like he's a joke kind of character. Obviously the first episode of one of the first three episodes, Kate tells him to get a baseball bat, hit himself in the nuts every hour on the hour or whatever. And then obviously in this one, we have Marie and Jordan with the tag team Coxplosion, as Jordan says. And by the way, they're a tag team later on in the episode, because as you said, Brittany, they wake up together, and that's maybe the best way to transition. Do we think that Marie is with Jordan, the female version, Jordan, the male version, or both? Brittany, what do you think?
The answer is yes. Yeah. I mean, the answer is, it's just curious that after that encounter where Marie is in Rufus' dorm, but Jordan's the one breaking down the door, right? Because she witnessed the exchange between the two at the bench, and clearly she followed them, and I guess in so many words was trying to save Marie. And it's Jordan in the female form. Not that I think it really matters, like male or female. Jordan's Jordan. Yeah. And when Marie is kind of like, what the fuck? And, you know, why are you doing this? It's a kind of an odd exchange, but they're kind of like fighting, but they're kind of flirting at the same time. But then later on, we'll see Jordan come to Marie's dorm room. And then Jordan switches from female to male, and then they start making out. It's like, wait a minute. Like, why do you feel the need to change, unless you can read Marie and maybe she's not into females, whatever, you know, it's each their own. Doesn't really matter to me. But like, because of that, it made me think, okay, at the end scene where it blacks out, we then see Marie again in the dorm. It's dark, she's in a bed, but then Jordan, female Jordan, like kind of turns over and puts her hand on Marie's shoulder. It's like, okay, but did Marie go to bed with male Jordan or female Jordan? It is very curious, because it seems at times Jordan prefers to be one sex over the other. Lots of questions. We have a lot more questions than we have answers at this moment.
Frank, I was going to ask you, like, to me, this is the most surprising part of the episode, because I just didn't see these two characters being together in any way, but especially like in a sexual way. Was that a surprising part to you, or did you kind of pick it? Like, were there breadcrumbs that I missed? Cause it seemed like it just kind of like was out of nowhere.
I didn't see it coming, I'm not going to lie. I think after the talk they had at the benefits banquet, the charity benefit,
right?
Jordan is trying to like distance herself, but like you see it, they're sharing stories through tragedy, right? Of like how they forgot their powers and all that. And I think that intimate moment kind of opened up Jordan towards her, and vice versa with Marie as well. So that's why I kind of like saw this more of a connection. But prior to that, I didn't see anything. I didn't. That came out of left field. But after that, I think they got closer.
Yeah. Tristan, what
yeah, like this. Piggybacking, you know, if everything Frank said, the natural narrative arc of like their relationship was always meant to bring them together at some point, because eventually you know, the problems that they're going to face are going to go beyond rankings and extend to like real life and death circumstances. So, you know, obviously you're going to need as many of those, you know, titular characters on the same side as possible. So like, you knew they were going to come together, and the both of them are, the both of them can kind of bond over, you know, not being included, you know, in different ways. Jordan for her sexuality, or, you know, the way she views herself, you know, Marie for just being a Black girl or orphan, you know, with these powers that she doesn't really know what to do with. So it, they were bound to come together. Did I see them coming together either side, like in that way? I didn't, but not surprised when you kind of see like the tension that was kind of building up in that moment. So,
yeah, I think it was well done. Everything in the show is really, really well done. I was just, wow, I did not expect that. But I mean, that's part of good TV. This show definitely is doing that. Talking about characters coming together, let's talk about how this episode started. Yeah, well, I'll talk about how it left off. Episode 3 left off, and, you know, Emma is small, and she goes to the guy's ear and brain and kills him. And then you think they're going to get caught because you see all these guards show up, and they're obviously outnumbered. And then, as Brittany, you were saying, obviously Sam is very powerful. And, you know, next thing we see open to this episode, episode 4, and it's a bloody mess. You know, like his little prison cell is bloody. There's dead guards everywhere, and they're on the run. And, you know, Sam, one of his powers, which Andre mentions later on, is that he has similar powers to Queen Maeve, like not only strength, but he has this ability to like do like a super jump, which is kind of similar to Wonder Woman. She has similar, sometimes she can fly, but sometimes she can just like jump like she's flying.
Bruce Banner too.
What's that?
Bruce Banner, Hulk as well.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one. Yeah, Hulk is a good one. Yeah. So we see like his powers, and they're on the run. They end up at a rundown drive-through that Luke and Sam went to as children. They enjoyed that, and you know, we kind of see, you know, Sam and Emma kind of bonding, and then we get to we kind of see like the psychotic part of the Sam character. Brittany, you want to talk about that and how the actors portrayed that part of the character?
Man, you know, this episode entitled "The Whole Truth" is very appropriately named. I mean, not because of Tech Knight's show called "The Whole Truth," but the fact that Sam is starting to learn the whole truth about what's been going on, especially even with Luke, that Emma had to come clean and say, you know, Sam, I'm so sorry. You know, Luke's dead. And Sam has a hard time dealing with it because he feels like he feels that Luke is the only person who can help him, right? He wants to get in touch with his brother and he can't because obviously he died. And so Emma's like making this promise to Sam about, you know, it's the two of us. We're going to get through everything together. And I think it's a really sweet moment because for someone who clearly has been tortured for probably a good majority of his life, his strength, his powers have had to be subdued because he's very dangerous, according to Dean Shetty. And he apparently exhibits episodes of schizophrenia, which is obviously a very real illness and condition that a lot of people will deal with. And we kind of get examples of that when he walks off and he's hearing like music play in his head, and he's like, stop it. Like the change in Sam from when he's just kind of having fun with Emma to hearing that music, it's like a flip, you know, it's a flip of the switch, you know, right? He starts really having a battle within himself. And then on a TV screen, you see kind of like almost like a Sesame Street setup with a puppet and an actor. And that actor is Jason Ritter. Television's Jason Ritter. And the puppet is none other than the Deep.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll go with that.
With his gills.
He's not the only thing that talks, right? Deep's gills in puppet form talk too, which is wild to me. And you know, they're talking to Sam, and Sam's just, you know, he's just flipping out, right? He's not having a good time. talking to TV's Jason Ritter, and they're feeding him things that he, I guess, knows to be true, that they're going to get you. They're not only going to get you, they're going to get her, they're going to torture her. And so he feels like this need to protect. And he's just having a difficult time determining what's real and what isn't in that moment.
Yeah, I just love the Sesame Street like parody. It's called Avenue V, obviously for Vaught. So they're so good at like parodying these like major brands and things.
I wonder what the jingle sounds like.
Yeah, but you know, go ahead, Frank.
I think what's interesting too about Sam's condition too is that we kind of noticed this in the past with Black Noir. Like, he has bouts of schizophrenia.
There you go.
And I don't know if it's the trauma of like, well, I think with Noir it was a trauma of the war and like the attack,
the brain injury,
the attack on them by in the 80s. But yeah. This is like a second reoccurrence I see with Sam, with schizophrenia. It's starting to become a trend and a theme with a lot of these heroes in the show. And no matter how they get it, it's through trauma of like what Vaught's put them through, whether it's Shade Grove, whether it's the woods. Like, it's Vaught and the different entities of Vaught don't care by nobody but the bottom line, and they don't care how they get it, they don't care what they put their subjects through. But you start to see this is the result of when a corporation is using you and using you for your skill set and not caring about what they put you through and the result of their actions. And Sam is a result of the woods. He's a result of Shade Grove. He's a result of Vaught trying to get wherever they can to further their brand by any means necessary. And it's a sad, and you see in other bouts in society, whether it's the military, whether it's politics, whether you see in other bouts throughout history and throughout society in the mainstream. So
I think the Compound V has something to do with it also. I think just that stuff obviously really impacts people. And Frank, you made a good point bringing up Black Noir, because, you know, he has these like imaginary conversations with animated characters. So it's like a childlike thing. And then Sam has these imaginary conversations with puppets, you know, like a Sesame Street kind of thing. So it's got to be, I think maybe it's tied to the fact that when these people were given Compound V, obviously it was, you know, when they were children, and there's something, I think there's something tied to the Compound V and then them having these like childlike interactions with, you know, puppets or cartoon characters, or I don't know. I feel like that's part of it in some way. Tristan, what did you think about the whole Avenue V thing and just Sam's kind of psychotic break?
Yeah, like for me, like it just continues the trend of us letting us know, like, hey, what, for all the powers that you have that you can control, that for a lot of them, there's some the side effects that you absolutely can't. Like, I was thinking, like, I wonder what the suicide rate is for kids who take Compound V. Like, I wonder if, you know, there's some data, on the Redditverse or something like that, but. I assume it would be like alarmingly high because of the mental effects that taking this highly, highly, highly dangerous chemical, you know, going into the brain, going to all parts of the body, like it's probably deteriorating their brain as much as they use it and as powerful as it makes them, it's also kind of weakening them at the same time. And like the battle that a lot of the soups are fighting is like the battle within themselves in their own brains. Like we've seen, like Luke, he wasn't just, you know, depressed about his brother. He was like super depressed to the point where he was willing to, you know, be manipulated to feel better. Like, so I wonder, like their happiness, like the soups that are horny are like super horny. You know what I'm saying? Like it takes every emotion to the extreme. So like, yeah, when they're depressed, when they're sad, when they're happy, horny, whatever, like all that stuff just goes to the max. So yeah, like that could also be the deteriorating their mental state as they use these powers.
And if the family has a history, I'd imagine, of some sort of mental illness, and you inject Compound V into a child not knowing.
Amplified.
Exactly. And how much, like what Tristan was saying, is that's going to also help, you know, or contribute deteriorating their mind and just their whole being in it of itself. So it's kind of like this, great, you're going to make your child a superhero and hopefully be part of the seven, but like at what cost, you know? And clearly these two boys both experience some sort of history of perhaps schizophrenia or something, because it seemed like Luke had visions of his brother in the first, you know, first episodes that we saw, right? And Sam is having visions or episodes of his own. And
this,
I was done.
No, and I was gonna say this has to be years in the making, because if I remember correctly, Luke's vision of was Sam as a boy. So I think Sam was little, right? Like in that vision or in that nightmare.
Yeah, he was.
We talked about that in the first episode of or our first pod review, because I thought that was a weird disconnect, because Luke did see Sam at Siege Grove 3 years prior to this show taking place. So it's not like he last saw Sam as a little boy. I'm like, why is he envisioning Sam, presumably Sam, as a little boy, unless there's a little boy who can project visions to people, but then why Luke? You know what I'm saying? There were a lot of questions I had about that particular scene.
It's either that or maybe Luke or Golden Boy shut down part of his mind to where he doesn't remember Sam as an adult or as a teenager. He remembers through trauma, all he remembers is his childhood of being around Sam. That could be another avenue. A question I wanted to pose you guys, man. I want to ask you this. Do you think Sam is at Homelander level as far as power?
That is a great question, because it would almost seem that Golden Boy was almost on par with Homelander, but I would think Sam is more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably more powerful, but that's why they've tried to keep him contained, because he can't control his powers.
Because we've seen in the past where like superheroes who don't develop correctly or rejected, they kill. And they've kept Sam for years now. They kept Sam under wraps. Like they told Luke that Sam was dead. And the fact that I'm assuming Sam has escaped a couple of times, the fact that they keep bringing him back and keeping him contained tells me that he is so powerful and so dangerous that they can't ever truly release him or truly leave him unattended because of what he's capable of doing.
Yeah, they can't control him. It's clear. Yeah. So I think he, like I said, I think he has similar powers to Queen Maeve. Like, so if you think about back in season 3 of The Boys, you saw Queen Maeve go head to head with Homelander. You know, they're pretty, you know, it's like Superman and Wonder Woman, you know, very, they're godlike beings. So they're both very powerful. So I think that, yeah, he's probably up there with Homelander and Queen Maeve and whoever else in this universe that we haven't met yet, but he's probably one of the more powerful people, I would think.
Hmm.
Tristan, do you have any thoughts on his power set? No,
agreed. I was thinking about that question, actually, you know, watching him fight. Like, could he possibly get with Homelander? But Homelander has like a configuration of powers. You know, he's a five-tool player.
Yeah.
five-tool soup. So I wonder, like we just found out, like you said, like Queen Maeve, he can make that big jump. I wonder what other powers, you know, come or are in Sam's toolbox that we haven't seen yet. Because like I said, Homelander is not just the strength, it's the eye lasers. He has a lot in his bag. So we'll see more about Sam before we make that comparison.
Yep. So
if they if they make him like another child of Soldier Boy, I'm gonna lose it.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, he likes the comics. He likes, you know, he likes Soldier Boy. So,
I mean, we are supposed to get a Soldier Boy cameo in this series. I think it's going to be like a much like Captain America in the in like Ant-Man or whatever, or Spider-Man, where they're watching those videos and like, you know, oh, you're in detention now. Like, this is what you learned. Yeah.
You messed up.
Yeah. There you go. That kind of stuff. But, you know, while Sam is having his psychotic break and you know, he's talking with the deep puppet and television's Jason Ritter, they tell him to kill Dr. Cardoza. And so then Sam goes to find Dr. Cardoza, which is the doctor that we've seen last few episodes. He's usually with Dean Shetty. So he goes to Dr. Cardoza's house. The other young Supes, you know, to go, I guess they're not officially Supes yet, but they go and try to stop him because Emma knew he was going there. And then you get kind of like a, it's almost like kind of like an X-Men kind of showdown. You have all the powers, they're all trying to stop him. Like you have Andre using his metal powers to move the refrigerator and hit him. And, you know, obviously Kate has the power to, she, you know, she puts her hand on him and control him, although she isn't able to do that. But I did think that was a really cool scene to see like them all like try to team up. And then in the end, which is something I mentioned last week, is my theory was like, okay, so we saw that Emma, she gets small by purging and she gets back to normal size by eating. My question was last week, I was like, well, what happens if she overeats? Does she become like 10 feet tall or whatever? And lo and behold, yeah, she pounds some spaghetti real fast and she's massive and she takes him down. Brittany, what did you think about that end of the episode?
I want to know what's in Cardova's mother's spaghetti recipe, because damn. I mean, little girl got tall, right? Unfortunately, she grew out of her clothes, you know. but yeah, she was the only one who actively did not try to fight Sam when, right, when he was fighting everyone, right? You got Jordan, Marie, Andre. You know, they're getting bested by Sam easily. And of course he instilled the fear of God in me just by yelling at Kate saying like, don't you touch me again, Kate. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I won't, but Emma was the only one who was not going to fight him. And she was reminding him, hey, this is what we said. We said, we're in this together. We're going to figure this out. We're, you know, we're here for each other. And yes, she had to overeat in order to pretty much subdue Sam, but she did it in like a very caring, loving sort of way. She had to get big, but she, I think, was able to reason with him. I would think it's almost hard to say because, you know, that's the moment where glitches, quote unquote, goes to black. And then we see Marie with Jordan. But I think that was actually really cool to see that her superpower isn't just purging, which is what she said to Sam earlier at that drive-thru. It's, she says, you know, it's embarrassing, it's, you know, disgusting or whatever. She can get large just by overeating, which is not great either necessarily, because that just means she has to probably purge or not eat for a little while in order to get small or back to normal size. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool to see that she may have tapped into something positive about her superpower. I don't know if she'll view it that way or not, but yeah, it was really interesting to see that she was the one to be able to reason with him, if you will.
I know she's frustrated to be around Thanksgiving, but golly,
yo,
my word. That's like, I have so many questions with her power. Like, When does she knows like when to eat like a normal balanced meal and not over, like what is the measurement of overeating and not and eating just enough? Like that's where I get confused.
She probably has to, you know, stay on a strict calorie type diet. If she goes under, she's not going to be as tall. If she goes over, she's, you know, I don't know.
I need to know. I just lost my whole train of thought. No, I need to know, are there alternative ways for her to get big or small? Because to be a superhero, like that's not the most efficient way to like tap into these powers when you really need them. Like he had to go find, luckily there was a spread of spaghetti, a room over, but like what happens if there's not any food around or she can't throw up? Like how did, you know, what good is she, you know, besides very good moral support. Excellent at that. But like,
she keeps like a protein bar.
How did she tap into those powers?
Just keep a protein bar in her, nice utility belt.
Always.
I mean, protein bar, protein shake, and a mint. Yes, that's essential. And also clothes. She's got to have some clothes. Like, she's going to need a suit kind of like She-Hulk where it expands with her, right? So maybe she'll get that Golden Boy suit that he'll never wear because it was already in production.
There's a lot a lot of preparation with her character. You know, like she's got to pack a lot of clothes. She's got to pack a lot of food. You know, like there's just a lot of stuff. You're right. It's not very practical. It works great for the story and for the show. But yeah, I don't see Emma having a long career as a soup, but she's definitely a great character. Mm-hmm. As we kind of head out on this episode, I want to talk about Andre. He kind of took a back seat in this episode, but I want to get y'all's thoughts on this character because I think what we're going to get probably pretty soon here is we're going to get some kind of showdown between him and his dad because, you know, like ever since he found out that his dad knows about the woods and told him, hey, don't say anything else about the woods. It's, you know, well, I guess we only learned that in episode 2 or 3. So we haven't known that for a long time. Yeah. 3. You can tell it's really bothering him. At one point in this episode, he uses his power on campus to crush the skull of his, you know, the dad statue. And whenever he's being interrogated by Tech Knight, he gets mad and he's like, you know, he questions his dad. He's like, you know, how can you be, you know, a hero when you're too fucking chicken shit to do anything heroic? And that's definitely a shot at his dad. I'm really interested to see what happens between Polarity and Andre going forward, because it seems like that's going to have to come to a head pretty soon. Brittany, what do you think about that? And is there anything else like that you're looking forward to next episode or in, you know, the final four we have coming up?
There definitely has to be something that transpires between father and son, because not only do they share what seems to be similar powers, because Andre was telling Kate about he used to watch his dad's movies and how he would hold out his hand of steel or something. So, you know, with Polarity, it's, you know, again, very, very appropriate. And Andre being able to manipulate metal too. It's interesting that, well, I guess, you know, father and son. Well, I don't know. The only other person that was able to have similar powers to their parent was Ryan with Homelander, right? But he was like the first natural born soup. I don't know. I'm very curious as to how Andre was able to get similar powers to that of his father. The fact that Polarity is a trustee with Godolkin and knows what's happening with the woods and warned his son to never speak of it again and basically not pursue it has to eat away at Andre. Andre, who never wanted to be number one, who, you know, was just happy being Golden Boy's friend and doing whatever he wanted. But then questions like what's good about having superhero powers if you're not going to do anything good? Like it should mean more to be a good hero than just to be like famous and, you know, get all those sponsorships and shit like that, right? You're going to see that strain between father and son, because clearly father is very much about appearances and wants the same for his son. And Andre just can't deal with that. He's like, no, you know, you have to do good. Like you just have to. And so it probably will mean Andre is going to expose his father for knowing some truth about the woods, or it's going to be a showdown. I don't know. Frank, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ongoing themes of this show, of both series, is that, man, there's some shitty parents out there, man. Like, it's like this JonBenet Ramsey type of, like, pageant. Like, I want to...
Wow, the analogy is so good.
Yeah, it's all about me. I didn't get a chance to be the person I want to be as far as just being this soup and live out my dreams. So I'm gonna live out my dreams and my goals through my kids. And what's so fucked up about it is that these kids didn't have a choice. They were pumped up with V as kids or newborns or whatever, and they didn't even have a choice in the matter. And it's kind of like, as a parent, your job is to protect your children and pass on your knowledge and prepare for this world. And you're robbing them of the opportunities of just being kids and like finding their own way. You're trying to choose this path for them. And Polarity is just more of the same. I mean, Polarity is no different than Starlight's mom, you know, and it's all about them and find the glitz and the fame. I knew he knew, like, the, I mean, him being the trustee, I just knew that he's privy to things that the outside world just doesn't know. And you know, this, and there's so much money being pumped into Kadokin. There's so much money being pumped into Vault. Is he just feeding into the monster? And you know, I'm glad to see as an audience viewer seeing Andre find this out about his father. And I can't wait to see where this goes. But something tells me, as selfish as Polarity is, if it comes down to like saving his son and like saving saving his son's loved ones, I think he's gonna flip. I think he's gonna do what he can to be the first kid. And because, like, also we don't know what they have on Polarity. It seems like when Andre exposed all of that, Polarity, it wasn't more so of like Polarity telling Andre to shut the fuck up. It was more so of Polarity being scared and being afraid of what could happen, not only to his son, but to him as well. So, but I think that this is going to be a character turn, if not this season, of next season, of Polarity, you know, siding with his son and helping, you know, that his son and the rest of the group out.
I mean, maybe. I think so much of the show is about, like, the limits of, like, rebellion. Because all these kids, to some degree, are rebelling against something, right? The parents, what society thinks about them, legacy and all these things. So, like, maybe Andre, you know, flips and goes and rocks with his dad again, because that's just what's expected of him. But it seems like he's trying to decide if he wants to, like, continue down that path, that Polarity Junior path, or if he wants to, like, chart his own and, like, you know, use these powers for good. And, like, he's still trying to figure out what that means. You know what I'm saying? Like, he feels like he's done a good thing by sending Emma in to, you know, find Sam, but, like, he's also not taking a risk. Like, that's something that he gets called out on. So, like, he still has so much learning to do that I imagine how that's mighty stressful to deal with that, plus you got the weight of the university and then, like, your father's legacy and what he expects from you. So that, I think that's one of the major plot lines of this series, is like, which path does Andre take? Because so many dominoes kind of fall after that, you know, after he makes that decision on who he wants to be. So that's one thing I'm looking forward to seeing throughout the, you know, next episode, throughout the rest of the season. Also, you know, Jordan and Marie, like, to what, how free and how open will Jordan, you know, be around Marie? Like, will they be comfortable, you know, being both sides? Will you know, she choose a side? Will that become, like, a different conflict? So, interested to see that, you know, last four episodes.
Yeah, we're already at the halfway point. That's the one thing about Amazon dropping three at a time the first week, is like, after the second week, we're at the halfway point. There's only four more to go. So once again, they should, like, just do one a week. We'll, you know, spread it out, have 8 weeks of content. We're good to go. But
I don't know. It's kind of torturous to wait a week. I don't know, because these cliffhangers are just so good. And for me personally, it's like, I want to know what happens next, like, right now.
Yeah.
Just me.
Well, I also, like, I think this show, because it's not characters that we know much about it at all, to me, it's like, I honestly don't know where it's going. I mean, I have a general idea, I guess, but like, I mean, this episode, there are three or four surprises, and like that, I feel like that's going to happen every week going forward. And so I look forward to, yeah.
Let's just hope there's no more dick exploding scenes.
Yeah.
Because man, that was
RIP to the PP, right? So that's how we're going to end this episode. That was
hashtag.
Hashtag.
RIP to Rufus PP.
I mean, that's a tough one to come back from, right? I mean, I assume we're going to see Rufus again, but like, you know, maybe not.
He should be dead from the excessive bleeding. Like that's a vessel. Like, I don't know how he's alive.
Does it grow back? Kid,
no.
The word of the day, kid, is consent.
There we go.
K is for consent. Just kidding. Man.
Well, we can't top that. So that's thanks to Tristan for that. Now, you know what we think about this episode of Gen V? We want to know what you think about it. And Brittany, how can people tell us what they think about this episode?
Let us know your thoughts by joining our live streams when we talk about not only Gen V, but other very popular shows, including Ahsoka, which we will be talking about tomorrow, Tuesday, October 10th. And we will also be talking about the season 2 premiere of Loki on Wednesday, October 11th. So be sure to subscribe to this YouTube channel. Hit that notification bell. That way you know when we will be going live next. Also, don't forget to hit the like button on this video because it really helps out our channel. We're on the road, y'all, to 300 subscribers. That's right, 300, because we are currently at 279. So follow us. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Tell Vought. Hey, we're here. Come follow us. But also, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, /X, Instagram, and now Threads. That's right. We're also on Threads. Search at Watchers Basement. You can also use the same hashtag, Watchers Basement, to help grow our audience. Send us memes, send us articles, send us things that you want us to check out. We'll be happy to do so. And if you're not into video podcasts like what we're doing here on YouTube, we've got you covered with audio podcasts available on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Be sure to follow us on all those platforms and give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you, Brittany. So for Brittany, for Frank, and for Tristan, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a good night.
RIP PP.